coming Willis, in motion right here.
Willis is the lone back. Play fake. And batted down from behind. It's loose. Iowa on the move. Tyler Sash. Gonna take it back. Trick or treat, Iowa City.
Boy, some tough news today for the Hawkeye family.
Yeah, that's it was a tough one to see, and eerie too. If you recall that, Brett Greenwood's heart condition issue also came to light the week prior to an Iowa State game as well. Just kind of a very eerie coincidence, I guess, and tough break for both members of that backfield. Off after their Iowa career.
Yeah, and they just, it's kind of sad because, we spent so much time cheering and screaming for all those guys, and, tough, difficult, especially, I'm in my mid-40s now. I know you're not far behind, and it's just, it just seems way too young. And
for sure, and really kind of put a damper on what had been a pretty nice week to be a Hawkeye fan for the first time in a while, huh?
Yeah, I mean, on a lighter note, it really was a solid week coming out of the game. So welcome to the 12 Saturdays podcast. I'm James Bladel.
I'm Tori Brecht.
And what are your thoughts? I mean, we couldn't have asked for a whole lot better, right, coming out of the first week. I know we were maybe predicting wasn't going to be the nail biter that some folks were saying, but I mean, did you see it going that well?
Well, Jim, I predicted a 31-17 final score.
You did.
And if it weren't for a blocked field goal, I would have been dead on. The way I looked at it is I chose to believe that this was going to be kind of a redemption tour, if you will, a year for a coach on the hot seat and a program that really didn't live up to their own expectations last year. And I think, as you and I said, walking out of the stadium, step one on what will be a long journey with that, I'm sure we are going to have some adversity along the way, but you couldn't have scripted a better first game, really.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I was excited. I was pleased, obviously. There's really, it's hard to find fault with the outcome. I think there were some elements that were concerning, or at least, to put it in coach speak, there's still plenty for them to clean up.
Absolutely.
Plenty of things to work on. But generally, yeah, I think that they did everything that you would expect them to do against an FCS opponent, good FCS opponent. So, imagine if that were you and I or North Dakota or something like that out there. I mean, they handled them pretty well.
Jim, at times last year, I think Iowa was kind of their own worst enemy. And I guess what was really rewarding to me to see is if you kind of went down the list of things that bothered you about how they played last year, it felt like at least in this first game, almost all of them were addressed. You had more creative, interesting play calling. You had running backs that seemed to be more doing running back type of stuff. the linebackers.
Amazing how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? The linebackers looked, they didn't look all world. It's not the second coming of Chad Greenway and Abdul Hodge, but they were in the right place. They made plays.
Well, it didn't matter if the guy, the quarterback is running from his life with
hellish
visions of Drew Ott, in his nightmares for the rest of his life.
Yeah, the defensive line just looked like, unstoppable. Now, again, to your point, it was against a smaller team than they'll normally see. But there were times last year when they were playing against, maybe not as great of a physical opponent, and they still looked bad and made mistakes. And then, what can you say? The quarterback position looked great, too, and the aggressiveness by Ferentz to go for it on some fourth downs, including a fake field goal that got a huge standing ovation, even though it failed. That was funny.
very telling indicator of where the psychosis of the fan base was, I think, on that one. And for me, the quarterback, I think you said great, and I think Kakert on Hawkeye Report gave him an A or an A-. I mean, I thought CJ did well, and you know, certainly didn't make any memorable mistakes. But I also thought that, you know, he just looked a little like just needed to get some cobwebs off. I mean, he ran better than he threw. Let me put it out there like that. You know, but certainly, I think didn't hurt the cause. And, but, you know, to be fair, and I'm just trying to be fair, I'm not trying to be a downer. You know, we had moments of optimism last year, you know, with Northwestern. We had moments of, you know, I think you and I were listening to the radio on the way back from Iowa City, people declaring that the Ferentz doubters can all just, you know, where I told you so. And it's like, well, hang on a second. You know, I mean, it's still early and there's still a lot to be seen. But what we did see was promising. We certainly didn't look that good last year against UNI or even Ball State. So you know, it was promising, but I am, I guess, cautiously optimistic. I'm not ready to say that all is well and the ship is righted, but it looks good.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can, because obviously one of the big problems last year was consistency, and that was from a game-to-game perspective and right. A series-to-series perspective within games.
Well, did you notice that we did that same thing that was maddening last year, where we kind of went into this little lull in the second and third quarter? I mean, we came out swinging first quarter, and obviously we put him to bed early in the fourth, but I think we only scored 3 points in the second through most of the third quarter.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, you can't, you know, and you can't rely on a team. They're not going to score on every drive or look great on defense all the time. And there are going to be some of those lulls. The question is do you let other teams back in the game when those come?
Right.
And do you let it affect you all the way? You look at the Nebraska game last year, you know, Iowa had a 17-point lead in that game and managed to blow it as well. So I think the jury is out on whether we can be consistent. I guess the good news is that they never felt at a time last Saturday when the game was going to start getting away from you.
No.
You know, Iowa controlled it from the very beginning and never relinquished control. And that's going to be the key. Can they keep doing that, especially against the quote unquote lesser teams that we're going to see on the schedule?
Yeah. Well, speaking of lesser teams, well, should we toast this one and then pivot a little bit to talk about some of the other teams in the conference?
A nice toast would be nice.
And by the way, you'd think that now that we're in season four, I would have taken just 5 minutes to update some of these sound effects. But no, now it's tradition.
You don't mess with the classics, you know?
Exactly.
You just can't. You know, speaking of upgrading sound effects and things like that, I think I wanted to touch on a little bit, too, that it felt like everything in the game day experience kind of got polished up a little bit. I thought the music selection was better. I thought the entrance timing and things were better. I mean, you know, it wasn't a huge sellout crowd, but didn't it feel like there was a little bit more energy and vibrancy in game day this week, and not just because they were winning?
That's what I was going to say. It felt better, but, you know, some of that is viewed through the lens of victory. It's always going to feel a little bit better. But, I mean, no, I think generally it was just a little more exciting, a little more interesting, a little more engaging with the fan. I think Brian Ferentz and maybe even Coach Ferentz recognized or acknowledged, and even Barta, I think, on the offseason acknowledged that the fan experience had gotten a little flat and that we needed to spruce some things up. And I was pleased with it so far. I'd like to see it continue.
Yeah, I think it goes to show you that at the end of the day, fan sentiment grumbling and money does
and empty
talk.
Seats
empty seats probably speak louder than any words typed out on an angry keyboard too. So yeah. You know, now it's up to the team to keep winning and get those seats filled back up, and then we can all have a big kumbaya moment and feel good.
I hope that's the case. So looking around the league, let's talk about what we saw from some of the other teams. What surprised you positive, what surprised you negative? I mean, I'll start. Ohio State looks like they've got video game level talent, and I say that after watching that Braxton Miller run. I went and I saw, you know, Virginia Tech right before halftime climb back into it and take a 17-14 lead at the break, and then I went to go, I don't know, you know, work in the yard for a little bit and came back out, and they were already down 2 touchdowns.
Do you work in the yard in the dark?
I don't remember how dark it was.
That's kind of where it was. Working in the garage.
I went to do something and I came back and I was like, the game was already out of control, and it was shocking how quickly that happened.
Yeah, no, I'm messing with you, but here's my question: if you know, based on what we saw from Ohio State last night, and then based on what they did to Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game last year, do you really want your Hawkeyes to win the West?
I don't know. It's like, who's going to be the sacrificial tuna before they go to the playoff?
Sacramento Lamb, as the folks on Hawkeye Report off topic like to say.
Something. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, who in the league could even, I mean, even Michigan State was probably like, yeah, you know, we'll hang with them for two quarters, but I, you know.
What about the great Christian Hackenberg from Penn State?
Oh, not talking about a surprise in the other direction.
Laying on his back 10 times, their turnstile offensive line. Boy, it goes to show you, just when you think that you have problems as a program, sometimes the little context and looking around can make you feel a whole lot better about how things are going.
You mean like Texas?
Texas, Penn State. I mean, some of these blue bloods are just not looking so hot, are they?
Michigan, you were telling me, wasn't it?
Well, Michigan, you know, let's talk about Michigan. What fascinated me about that Michigan game is, you know, Jake Ruddock looked like he brought all of the problems that we talked about Iowa kind of addressing in their first game and migrated them over to Ann Arbor. Now, granted, they were playing on the road. They were playing against a better team. But, you know, you look at it, and it's funny to hear the Michigan fans kind of talking about it, because they went back and, after the disappointment kind of wore off, they looked at Jake's stats. Like, you know, he was around a little over 60% passing and 279 yards. You know, once he gets everything straightened out, things are going to be fine.
I know. It's the same argument we heard every single week last year, which is, if we could just cut down on those interceptions, and if he could just see sometimes the guys, if he could just stop overthrowing the wide open guy in the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, my favorite one, I think it was on Reddit, was somebody said, well, you know, he's going to do that at Utah because he's not used to the elevation. So that's why he was overthrowing them. And I'm like, and I just responded something like, yeah, he had 2 years to learn the elevation of Kinnick, guys. So, but I mean, not to pick on anybody, but it is eerie how similar both the tone and the frustrations, you know, just kind of echoed. But hey, you know, the only thing I can say is in, you know, he probably is head and shoulders above the other QBs they have on scholarship, first of all. And secondly, if it's frustrating for Michigan fans, well, at least it's new. I mean, for us, it was kind of like Groundhog Day, and we were tired of it. But for them, yeah, it's an upgrade. So it is possible for our worst quarterback to leave Iowa, go to Michigan, and both schools improve.
All right. Now, and, you know, maybe both Northwestern and Minnesota might be the real deal a little bit this year. I think that
That's a little scary.
The West Division looks like a lot of okay teams with some flaws, and I put Iowa squarely in the middle of that. You know, I don't see a head and shoulder favorite in that division based on week one.
No, I don't. I think anybody can beat anybody. It could come down to home field advantage. It could come down to things like weather later in the year.
Sure.
I mean, I guess, yeah, even Illinois. I mean, you know, who we also play. I know they're not, well, they are in the West, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I didn't see anybody look bad. Nebraska, of course, it's just fun to watch them lose that way. but generally speaking, nobody fell over the way that Penn State fell over, the way that Purdue, you know, fell over, that kind of stuff.
Right.
I think those two probably are bringing up the rear. Indiana, I think, they ended up winning, but I think they struggled.
Yeah, their defense is it's a wet paper bag. Yeah. So,
and I mean, it's obviously it's Ohio State, and then it's Michigan State is a distant second, and then it's a whole bunch of other crap.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then, there's a big bunch in the West, I guess I would put in the third tier. And then there's just a bunch of flotsam down at the bottom.
Right. Well, yeah, the interesting thing, though, Jim, is that last year the Big Ten got off to a real rocky start, too. I was kind of looking back at some of the columns I'd written. But then they kind of righted the ship and then ended up doing pretty good in the postseason. So, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So it's probably smart to try not to make too many sweeping generalizations on what's going to happen based on week one.
What? No, we're supposed to project it. I mean, there's bowl projections in playoffs.
There are bowl projections.
But there are 10 ranked teams now from the SEC in the top 25, I think, which is a record.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how that goes. Well, you wanted to, every year we try to come up with a new segment. So shifting gears a little bit, and we've done the Speaking with the Enemy, we've done the Ikben Expert, we've done the Ink Stain, what is it, the journalist?
Ink Stained Wretches.
The Ink Stained Wretches.
Print journalists.
We have a new one that we're putting together called...
well, we kind of have done it a couple times,
which is,
but we didn't have an official name for
it. Now we have a name for it. Would you like to introduce it? Because it's kind of offensive.
Our other new segment is Talking Football with Women and Foreigners.
Yes.
Who always kind of bring an interesting perspective to it. They're not as obsessively, compulsively watching it like Jim and I do and many
Which
of our
makes
other...
them probably smarter.
More well-balanced. Just better human beings, really.
And generally a lot more likable and more interesting. And
happier,
to
probably.
And so rather than try and figure out what
not instead of doing the same one every week, which can get kind of boring and hard for us to kind of always find somebody.
Yeah, so we decided instead we've installed. How do you like this this wheel? Have you seen the wheel?
The new we've installed
the
new
Wheel of Destiny.
Big Wheel of Destiny here at 12 Saturdays headquarters in lovely downtown Bettendorf, Iowa. Sometimes.
Which is moving, by the way. It's moved from... We used to have it. They tore it down to make way for the new bridge.
Right. It was small.
Last year's headquarters.
And our satellite campus in LeClaire that we have. The big board is mobile, but it's basically like the one from The Price is Right when you do the showcase showdown.
I think
so
it looks more like the Wheel of Fortune meets
a merry-go-round.
It's both, depending
on if it's standing up or sideways.
But like a really dangerous merry-go-round, like one like they would have removed from playgrounds years ago and instead put some totally not fun toy in there.
But what we've done is we've put each of the different segment names on there. So we have Ikben Expert, we have Talking Football with Women and Foreigners, we have Ink-Stained Wretches, and we have Speaking with the Enemy. We have four of those.
We have Potpourri, and we have Lose a Turn.
Right, and Bankrupt.
And Spin Again.
And spin again. So what we're going to do is each week we're going to spin the big wheel, and then whatever it lands on, that is the bit or segment that we're going to do week. So,
I think
so Jim,
know.
Who gets to
I think
do
they
the
know how
big...
wheels work.
I'm setting the scene, man, visually. So who's stepping up to the wheel and giving it the first swing?
You know, I'm still kind of tired from lifting this thing in here, and I calibrated all the ball bearings using my NASA... you know, rated spectrometer. You go ahead and give it the inaugural spin.
All right, here we go. 1, 2, 3.
My goodness, would you look at this?
Oh, that's...
what an enormous spin.
But,
well, there we go.
We could do a commercial while this is going, couldn't we? Make a little extra money.
We landed on Ink-Stained Wretches, one of my favorite categories, being a formerly reformed journalist myself.
Yeah. And who's our guest? Who's today's wretch du jour?
One of my favorite Hawkeye beat reporters, Scott Dockerman of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, formerly a colleague of mine at the world-renowned Muscatine Journal, where Mark Twain also got his start. You know, that's where all the great writers, Twain, Brecht, Dockerman, etc. Cool. Well, welcome in again, Scott. I know you've been a guest in the past, and I know our paths have crossed in the past, so it's always
it's
good
weird
to have
that he
you.
Wanted to do it again, by the way.
Yeah, I guess it's all right. I guess I was watching the Cubs game tonight, and it kind of dawned on me that I remember, I think it was when Torrey had just left the Muscatine Journal in 1998, and he and I went on a bus tour to Wrigley for a game, and I want to say they played the Astros, and I was in day 3 of quitting smoking, and it was pure hell for me. I mean, we, you know, by that time I was just, you know, just jonesing in the worst way. And I just remember Tori looking at me and goes, "Why don't you just, you know, go ahead and smoke? Otherwise, you're going to be a bleep all day."
And of course, I didn't. I was still smoking at the time, and wasn't a good enough friend to abstain. So that tells you a lot about me.
Well, a lot of, you know, there was a lot of peer pressure, but I sucked it up and didn't do it. Right. Here I am. I had one since then, so that's good.
That's tough love, Scott. And speaking of tough love, it seemed like some messages sank in with a unhappy fan base and maybe not a super pleased AD there. What did you see from the Hawkeyes this last Saturday that was different than last year?
I think in a lot of ways that, and I'd heard that there's been some sort of consultant involved with the football program to kind of give them some pointers on how to better deal with the public. And, you know, that starts obviously with media, but then also the fan base. And I think what we saw, what I've seen, and is that they have a little more swagger to them. They're projecting a lot more confidence, both in the way they play and their actions, and then their words and interviews and what have you. And I think the way they came out and just, they attacked. They did what they wanted to do. They took what they wanted. And then, you know, to me, the play of the game was a failed play. It was the fake field goal when they're up 14-0, you know, and Marshall Kane takes the snap and runs 8 yards when it's 4th and 10. But it showed that they're willing to be aggressive, that they're listening to their fans, that they're willing to take chances and not be so damn conservative all the time. And the fans rewarded them by applauding. I mean, it was the loudest applause I heard all game. And I think that was something that, you know, that it kind of brought everybody back together. Like, it reminded Iowa fans why they like Iowa. And the players were, and it kind of said, okay, you guys respect what we're doing. And
do you think the fan reaction to that play, the standing ovation for a failed fake field goal, do you think that surprised the coaches and the players? Do you think they were maybe expecting boos?
I don't know. And it was interesting, you know, in asking a couple of the players afterwards that they all just said, yeah, that was really cool. You know, I'm glad that they did that. And it was like kind of the fans just wanted to reward them, I thought, was the main thing. And the players really enjoyed it. You know, the fans recognize that they're doing things a little bit differently. And it's kind of this reciprocal relationship. I mean, you know, we've been through it now for a while where it's been a lot of stale over the last 5 years. It's been a lot of boring. It's been, you know, nothing that makes you just want to jump out of your seat and pound your chest if you're an Iowa fan. And, you know, and they're not going to win them all. They're not going to win them all this year. And maybe not any other year, but you want to feel proud and good about your team, and they gave the fans something different and exciting to enjoy, and I think the fans felt that way, and the players felt that way, and the rhetoric coming from these players right now is just so different. The confidence that they're oozing. I mean, Matt Vandenberg said, "We're always going to be the aggressor. We're always going to," and I'm like, "What?
Who are you talking about?" You know, one thing that kind of struck me, Scott, thinking about it after the game, is that, you know, I think everybody genuinely liked Jake Ruddock last year. I think everybody genuinely likes CJ. I think they're both solid, if not spectacular, quarterbacks. But was there maybe a little bit more of a toll on team chemistry from that that quarterback controversy last year than maybe we all thought at the time?
Yeah, I think there was. I think it was kind of a seesaw relationship, you know, and CJ's kind of one of the guys. He's just got natural charisma and leadership that guys just want to be around him. They want to follow him. And he had a lot of guys in his corner. And Jake, to his credit, I mean, he's a tough, hard-nosed guy, fiery guy, but just a little bit different. And, you know, and obviously the way they play is different. I mean, we've all seen that, but I think last year that there wasn't a real good chemistry on the team, and they've acknowledged that. And in some ways, once you kind of hear it, you kind of go, oh yeah, I guess I could see it. But you know, in our mini sessions with them, they don't really project it. But I think going back to last year, you just didn't see that, you know, harmony. And what I've noticed from this year's team is they've worked on it and they seem to acknowledge it. There's two other teams that kind of remind me of just the attitude that this team has, and that's probably going into 2008 and then going into 2013, because both years they were coming off adversity in certain ways. You know, 2007, they had so many off-the-field problems. The worst year, parents acknowledged it. And then they went to Louisiana and did some post-Katrina or post-Hugo cleanup and really tried to focus on themselves and becoming more of a family. And by the end of the year, I'll argue that they were the best team in the Big Ten. And then after going out 4-8, they decided to change a few things up. And in 2013, they were pretty good. And I think this year, you know, I'm not making a prediction or anything, but I think that they just feel more, there's more togetherness. And, you know, and I think C.J. Beathard is kind of the face of the program now. He accepts it. And I think, you know, the players all kind of accepted their roles and then they enjoy each other. And there's that will take you a long way. And especially, you know, getting that win, I think, just was a huge exhale for the program. And I'll say that same thing for Iowa State, the way they play too, beating you and I. But they just, both teams, I think, had a huge exhale, but I think it can go quickly the other way depending on what happens this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, before we get to too in-depth on Iowa State, one more question I have for you that you know, when they first said it, I kind of poo-pooed it. But, you know, when Ferentz had made his remarks about, you know, finally having the facility done and being able to focus 100% on football, you know, I kind of poo-pooed it and thought, you know, that seems kind of silly. But then I read his long interview with your colleague Mark Morehouse, where he kind of brought it up again and expanded on it even a little bit more, and talking about how he didn't quite realize how big of a deal it was going to be once it was done. You know, I'm starting to feel that might have been a little bigger distraction and a bigger detriment than we thought at the time as well.
You know, you're right. There was, you know, they had two bye weeks last year, and they were supposed to move in before the season. They didn't get it done. Then they decided that they wanted to do it for the first bye week, and it wasn't ready yet. So then they were going to wait until the second one, but by then it was already two-thirds through the way through the season, and Kirk just postponed it. But it was always this, you know, you got to get that going, and it just never materialized. And I can sense a different vibe coming from the program and moving in their new digs, and it's an amazing palace, and but it's not like gaudy, you know, there's no golden toilets or anything like that. Well, maybe eventually, but it's a brilliant facility. I mean, you know, it's efficient. I think that's the first word you describe it, because they can take things from go to A to B. I mean, now they've got, you know, or in the old building and the old setup, they'd have, you know, it'd take half an hour to move equipment across the place, and now it's just right across the hall. And you know, the weight facility is amazing. That, you know, the video rooms are just upstairs in the classrooms, just upstairs from the football field, so they can apply all of that. And I think that facility has given them new life now that they're in. It's kind of, in some ways, it enabled them to really have closure on last year and look forward, that because here it is, it's a new building, it's a new era, and, you know, kind of close the chapter on a really bad year. I think that's something that's really paying off.
Changing the scenery is maybe first step towards changing your outlook, you know, and if you, you know, it's like you said, it's not so much eliminating your distraction, it's just, you know, showing the team this is the university, this is what we're putting behind you and behind, you know, the program, and this is you know, this is also kind of the, you know, what you're going to have to live up to.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's a functional facility, and I think it sends a new vibe. You know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, there's that investment, and you know, Iowa had fallen woefully behind a lot of other schools in the Big Ten. You know, the bubble was nasty, and after a while, and it'd be 120 in the summer, and it'd be 14 in the winter, you know, just a terrible place to practice. Kids didn't like it very much, and you know, as much as
and yet Hayden fought so hard for that bubble because it was so much better than what they had before.
Yeah. State of the art technology in 1984, man.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you didn't want to practice outside. Like, at least you have a roof over your head, I suppose. Yeah.
So, go ahead. So everything's all sunshine and roses, and everybody's feeling good, and the team's got the. But this could all come to a really bad screeching halt, and we could be right back in the pitchfork and tar and feather things if things don't go well in Ames, don't you think, Scott?
Without a doubt. I think for both teams it's that way, but especially Iowa, because that's the one I pay most attention to, that if they lose another trophy game, I mean, after losing all four last year, if you lose four out of five to Iowa State, I mean, the fans, from the diehards to the fair weather ones, it would be ready to write it all off.
Well, I've said it too, Scott. I've said, you know, this is, for me, Iowa State is a pass-fail on Ferentz this year. Maybe that's not fair. Maybe that's, you know, too harsh. But I believe just kind of stepping back, looking at the whole, you know, his whole resume against Iowa State in the last 7 years or 17 years, but especially in the last five, is that you've got to beat this school. I mean, nobody else really struggles with Iowa State except us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Iowa State and Northwestern are kind of 1A and 1B in that regard. And I think, you know, the problem is for, I think it took, Ferentz now realizes it, but I think it took him a long time to realize that right now the fan base is looking at it from a five-year window. That going into this year, you know, they're 34-30 over 5 years, 19-21 in Big Ten play. I want to say they're 5-13 or 5-20 or something like that when it came to the trophy games over that period. But he was looking at it last year going, okay, going into their final two games, they're, you know, within striking distance of winning the West Division title. But I think the fans were looking at it going, yeah, but you got bombed at Minnesota. You lost to a bad Iowa State team. You lost all four trophy games. You know, there's a disconnect there, and I think, you know, it took him a while, but by about summer, you could sense that he understood kind of the frustration that Iowa fans had with that, and came to kind of that conclusion that, okay, let's, you know, it's time to shake some things up. And as you mentioned, Mark did a really good job of interviewing him, and, you know, Mark and I kind of talked about some subject matter, because every main media outlet got a chance to talk to Kirk, and I kind of said, hey, you know, this is your one-on-one. Let's go back to Vats football, you know, because that was
right.
The big deal, you know. And
well, the disconnect, you know, that you mentioned is so important, I think, and I think you nailed it, because, you know, I mean, people would ask him pointed questions or ask him about the fan, you know, disgruntled fan, and he would, you know, tell a story about Dallas Clark. And we're like, oh, I'm looking at my calendar, and Dallas Clark not only is not playing in black and gold, but he's also retired from the NFL. So can we
get... Exactly. I mean, the kids that are coming in, the first-year freshmen were like five when he played at Iowa. So that's a long, long time ago for a lot of these guys. So, yeah, he loves his Dallas Clark analogies and stories, and, you know, and talking about, you know, we've been competitive since, what, 2001 or whatever, but that is a loss. I mean, what I think is realistic for Iowa, it isn't to say they need to win the division every year or they win the Big Ten title every year, but I think there needs to be every 3 to 4 or 5 years, you know, the optimism that this is the year and it happens, and, you know, and it's not that they're going to go to the Big Ten title game and beat Ohio State, but just that, and last year was that year where everything was kind of building upward, and there it is, and instead it fell flat, and it felt just like the other flat years, and you don't, you're looking at it the kind of platitudes going, what's going to be different? And I think that's what he saw, and it was relayed to him, and he's changed some things up. And I'll tell you what, talking to the players, they changed their whole attitude. When Iowa State Week, which I generally detest, because most of the questions, especially from our Central Iowa brethren are all about the rivalry, and I kind of rolled my eyes after a while. But you know, talking to Iowa players of the past, they just kind of blew it off. They are psyched for it. You know, and TJ Beathard says, you know, hey, they've had that trophy for a year. Now it's our turn to go get it back. And, you know, I'm like, whoa. And, you know, talking to Greg Maben, and I actually asked him specifically, you know, who hates you more, in Minnesota or Iowa State? And he goes, well, I think we should fight each other to find out who hates us more. And I thought it was really funny.
That is funny. Well, you know, and I'm glad. I had to hear that because, you know, for better or worse, I honestly think that Ferentz, with his kind of NFL mindset for years, and he'd kind of let it slip every once in a while, that he kind of views the non-conference as a bit of a preseason for the real season, which is the Big Ten, and you kind of tinker around and you don't want to show too much and do all that. Do you think we might actually get to see like a no holds barred, you know, pull out all the stops effort this Saturday?
I kind of do. I do. I get that vibe that this isn't just a normal year where they kind of go workman-like and, you know, just have this narrow focus. I have a feeling that they are really pumped for this game. I mean, they're playing the Iowa State fight song in the locker room, and it's loud, and they hate it. I mean, Drew Ott and Beathard just said it was too loud. I'm thinking, you're the son of a country music songwriter, and you think it's too loud, you know, and it just really irritates them. But I think that, you know, this right now...
Well, I think
right,
you know, that's
now,
a good point, because the Iowa State fight song is played on a banjo. If I'm not mistaken.
Right, yeah.
Or maybe just...
And a jug. They've got a jug in there. And
a washboard.
Mouth harp things, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the darlings come down from the mountain.
I'm worried though, because I'm hearing that, you know, Iowa State has more talent this year. They loaded up on some JUCOs. Everybody knows they've got some nice receivers, and they always seem to have a good mental edge against Iowa. But, you know, it seems to me that usually if the game ends up being close, Iowa tends to choke it away. But if they can kind of come out and set a tone, they can sometimes cruise to a win. Do you think that that's kind of what we're going to see one way or the other?
I kind of think it's going to be close. But I think this time around, Iowa's attitude is so different. They have more swagger to them. And that's more intangible, but I get the feeling that they feel good about themselves, which maybe they didn't project that kind of confidence in the past. And I know it's hard to put a pin on it, but, you know, in years past, I agree with you, you know, the last three or last 4 years, I mean, these games, you know, would be so close. And by mid to third quarter, you look up, you know, like Iowa's dominated this game and they're only up by 3 points, you know, and Iowa State knew that they were in it and they really pushed through. But, you know, this time around, things might be a little bit different just because I like their attitude. And you know, Beathard, I know we've talked about him a lot, but there's just something there. I mean, he's just got a different kind of charisma that, you know, Stanzi had it to some extent, but this guy's got a better arm. He can throw guys open. And now, I'll say this, you know, Iowa State can scare the daylights out of you because of their two wide receivers. I think that Alan Lazard is definitely an NFL caliber receiver, and Quentin Bumbich is a really good one. He had, I think, 3 touchdowns against Iowa 2 years ago. And so on Richards, they can make plays. They can't run the ball in Iowa up the middle, so it's going to be about who matches up on the outside. And I think, you know, Iowa does have 2 really good corners. I mean, I think Maben and King are both NFL guys. So, you know, if Iowa can somehow slow down Lazard and Bundridge, and if Drew Ott kind of gets let loose like a, you know, a tiger in a kindergarten class, I mean, it could be. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa does anything.
I just had a visual of that.
How many kindergartners do you think it would take to take down a tiger?
I mean, I think the first 2 or 3 would slow him down, but then the rest would just kind of scatter, run in circles. You know,
anyway,
especially if you lock the door.
So here's my question. Drew Ott was basically unblockable against whoever the left tackle is that Illinois State ran out. To me, I think a lot of that game, Scott, next week can hinge on if Iowa can get consistent pressure there might not be time for those good wide receivers to get open. There certainly wasn't time for Illinois State with some nice skill players to do much. What is State's line, offensive line, looking like?
It's a little bit better than it was last year. I mean, Jake Campos is the guy who's going to block him for the most part. And he's about, he's a giant. He's like 6'8", close to 300 pounds. He's from the Des Moines area. In fact, I think he's a Valley kid. And he originally committed to Missouri, and Iowa backed off. And then Iowa State just kept pushing, and finally he flipped. And so he's, I think, a sophomore, I want to say, sophomore or junior. And, but that said, Drew Hodge, I think he might be the most underrated of the better defenders in the league. I think he played better last year than Shalik Calhoun at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. He's not Joey Bosa, but he's a second round type pick. So I don't think he would fear him.
He got around their tackle and their tackle and their tight end on a couple of plays.
Yeah, and I was going to say, maybe I actually kind of like the idea of Campos being big, because I think Ott's strength sometimes is just his quickness and agility, because it looked like he could run around a lot of the big offensive tackles and then wreak havoc once he got in the back. Trey Robertson's not exactly an unathletic slow guy.
Oh, I know. I mean, the way they pinned him down, that was something that they had so many problems with in the past, and did a really good job there. But his get off is so quick and violent and explosive that, no matter who the tackle is, it's going to be a problem. And let's face it, the guy went up against Sheriff for a whole year. Jake Campos is not Brandon Sheriff. So, he'll be fine. And I think another guy who is pretty underrated, but his performance was really good the other day, is Jaleel Johnson. He clogged the middle, and I think he's got really good potential. And if he can do that again, I look for Iowa's defensive line to be in really good shape against Iowa State. To me, it's going to be a matter of, last year the problem was they played patty cake. They decided, let's just keep Sam Richardson in the pocket, and he had an injured ankle. It made no sense. And then why he was get down the field, and I don't, they're not going to do that again afterwards. The players and pretty much all said, look, we didn't like that style. And Phil Parker said, no, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down attack. And I think that's what they're going to do on Saturday. And I think Lazard will make a play or two because he's just that good. But I think Iowa's good enough to overcome it.
And I'm looking forward to seeing, but here's what I don't want. I want Iowa to be completely aggressive on offense. I want them to be aggressive on defense. But if they punt every punt into the stands or into the for a touchback, I'm fine with that. Don't let Lazard return punts on you. Don't.
Yeah, they're going to be concerned with that after DeMorne Pearsonell. Last year at Nebraska. So I don't think they'll take any unnecessary risks. They're doing more with their punt game. Better, it's going to be better. But the other thing is, UNI's punter was so bad. It was just like line drive city to a really good athlete. It made no sense. So I expect him to do more angling. But Dylan Kidd wasn't all that great either the other day. He had two touchbacks and two punts. He's got to be better than that. Otherwise, it's going to end up being Marshall Kane.
Well, you know what? And for this game, I'm fine for him kicking it into the end zone. I don't want to see a return, And the punts only go to the 20, not the 25, right? So I can live with that.
That's right. And I agree. I guess of the bunch, if your options are get rid of it and make them go 80 yards on you, go ahead. But then again, if you're punting from the 36, which I don't know if Iowa's going to be doing that anymore. But if you are, you kind of want to angle it or what have you. And, like last year, that second punt that DeMorne Pearsonell brought back, he was told to, kick it out of bounds. And he had a nice kick. It's just he didn't get it far enough out of bounds, out of bounds. And he brought it back 81 yards.
How about let's not punt? How about that?
There you go. Let's just score every time. I'm down with that, Jim. Let's do that.
They might. This Iowa State thing, they've got all these new guys, JUCO guys, And, you know, I wonder, okay, what's going to happen when Iowa does shove the ball down their throat? You know, that's going to happen at least once. You know, do they have the proper techniques and discipline to stay in their position no matter what? Or, you know, the other day, you and I, this is not a good you and I team. This is not what we saw last year or 2012 or 2009. I mean, they've got a lot. I mean, Aaron Bailey's their quarterback. He was the third best quarterback at Illinois. So I kind of wonder if right now, you know, they feel good about themselves, but they were 128th last year on defense. So I think Iowa's got a chance if they dominate at the point of attack to really force some issues that Iowa State's not willing to accept.
Well, when you talk about, you know, JUCOs as well, I mean, when we start talking about intangibles, one would think that maybe they wouldn't quite have that same chip on their shoulder and that hate of for Iowa as well. So, you know, like I was telling Jim last week, I think with Iowa State, you kind of need to like punch them in the face a couple times, get them down, and they're used to losing. So, you know, let them start thinking about, yeah, well, here we go again, right?
Don't take their hope away early. And,
yeah, I mean, the games that we've seen where Iowa is really in dominant, I go back to 2010. When Iowa scored, I think, their first three possessions. And it was like, you know, putting their head in the toilet. You know, they're just not getting out of it. Yeah. And but then the other years where Iowa's been up, you know, 7-3 points, and you're in the third quarter, and, mm-hmm, and it's in Ames, and they've got a, you know, a bigger stadium now, a louder stadium, that all of a sudden it's like, you know, they're going to feed off that energy. And, you know, it's a rivalry game, and they accept it, and next thing you know, they're doing whatever it takes to win. And I think Iowa's going to be there this year.
I hope so.
In the past. Yeah.
My joke is you can literally hear the Iowa coaching staff sphincters start to pucker as those games get tight. And it's like, you know what's going to happen before it happens. It's not a pretty sight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And God forbid we get up by 4 points late in the game, because Tori, you and I both know.
Oh, you know my 4-point curse thing. Yeah, 4 points is worse than 3 points lead. So, yeah. Have I ever given you my whole theory on that, Scott?
No, but I think it makes sense. I've thought that too. You know, a lot of times where, you know, it's like, hey, if a team knows they have to go for a touchdown, they are much more aggressive than if
more
they have
dangerous
to go for three. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, well, how's life in the newspaper world these days? I know you guys have some uncertainty over there with the sale of KCRG. You know, you guys have done such a great job, and I'll give a shameless plug that I think the Gazette has handled the transition to a more digital environment much better than the rest of the media in the state. How are things looking and feeling for you, Scott?
You know, it's really an uncertain future, I guess. You know, it's a little concerning, but not, you know, fully there yet. I mean, KCRG and the Gazette have been, you know, basically siblings since 1953, you know, under one family-owned news organization, and it's been, you know, a big plus. You know, so it was a real shock last week when we found out that KCRG was sold. I think from the sports perspective, specifically the three of us that primarily cover Iowa, you know, myself, Mark Morehouse, and Mike Halas, you know, we understand the digital age a little bit better than a lot of other people, and so we've, you know, done that forcefully, and I hope that the rest of our company does that, because now that we're strictly a newspaper type for, you know, operation, we need to transfer that over to the digital product, and we've done a lot cross platforms, primarily because we, you know, with KCRG and there's two other digital channels, we did a lot of work on those. Now that we don't own KCRG anymore, we'll still do some of that work, but we need to focus on ourselves. So hopefully we come up with some new ideas and pull on some others and stick around for a while, because I think we have a pretty important voice in this part of the world, and I like the content we produce. I think we have a really good team, and we work well together. And you know, I'd put ourselves, you know, not to brag too much, but I'd put our trio up against anybody in the state by far and away.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and I think you guys have done a great job of engaging Iowa fans and other sports fans and just people in general across the Twitterverse, and you guys get it, so that's fun. So, hey, well, as you know, we always try to put our guests on the spot, so I am going to pin you down here and see if you can give us a prediction for the rivalry game coming up this Saturday. What does the I know you're not Hostradamus, but what is the doc see in his? I don't know if you have a crystal ball or a stethoscope.
I guess one of each. It depends. With my predictions, I tend to not go out on a limb too much. I for the newspaper, I did make my final prediction of 27-25 Iowa. But my view that I probably won't go publicly except on 12 Saturdays is that I think Iowa dominates. I think this could be a 17-point Iowa win. But I'm hedging a little bit publicly, in case it doesn't work out that way.
Well, nobody's ever gone wrong predicting the outcome of this particular game.
Only me every year.
Of us every year.
Well, see, my thing is, and I'm not going to wuss out when I actually make my prediction, but I really do kind of believe that it has to be either a dominant Iowa win or they somehow find a way to shit the bed and lose in some sort of excruciating fashion that makes me want to drink to blackout status. Because that's typically how this game seems to go. I can't even conceive of Iowa pulling off a close victory in this game.
It's really about, you can measure by what I'm drinking. It's either champagne or paint thinner.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, in all these games, though, and I was actually won two out of the last three in Ames. And, their two wins were decisive, and their loss was, triple overtime. So, it's going to be a tough environment, but it's not one that Iowa has been dominated in for 10 years. Frankly, the last time they won by six, but they're up 27-7 midway through the fourth quarter. And in 2009, they just destroyed them. It was 35-3 and then, the other one. So I think Iowa's going to score points. I don't think Iowa State's that stale. I think Iowa last year was the confluence of a really bad game plan and sticking to it no matter what. And just, a bad quarterbacking play, frankly. Mm-hmm. So, I think they've got a better game plan on both sides of the ball, and I think they've got, the player who tips the field and C.J. Beathard. So I can see Iowa winning by 17. That's probably what I would, I'll say to you guys. again, in the newspaper, I'll pick it,
Well, you're very fortunate that no one listens to us.
That is not true. We've got I looked on the Bitly click link last week, and they were coming fast and furious. We're a growing juggernaut, Jim.
We are. Yeah. We'll be into the huge. We'll be up there pretty soon. So I'm with you. I feel like you have to win dominant. You have to put them away early. That's the only way to beat these guys. They're it's like when you have any kind of an insect infestation. You can't just put out a little bit of raid and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You really got to go all around the foundation.
Well, from your lips to the corn god or whatever's ears, Scott, and as always, we appreciate you coming on and helping out our humble podcast. To have a true professional is always a nice thing, so thank you very much.
Hey, I love being on with you guys, and I've known you for about 20 years now, Tori, and it's weird seeing your kids now, and your daughter is a senior in high school, is that right?
Oh, yeah, and you want to hear the worst part? I think she's going to be a Badger, Scott.
No way.
Yeah, she fell in love with the University of Wisconsin on a visit up there. They have a French house where she gets to speak French and eat baguettes and crap. I don't know. So what are you going to do? Oh, but this will make you feel good. This is what she told Mom and I, who are both Iowa alums. Well, she got accepted to Iowa, so she has her, quote, backup school set. So I guess that's good.
Well, I guess over here there are torches and pitchforks out for the new Prez. So
yeah. Well, we could do a whole nother podcast on that. Maybe we'll have you back later in the year and we can talk about what's going on and what it means for the Iowa athletic department. But that's a story yet untold, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one that's developing day by day.
For sure. All right. Well, hey, thanks for coming on the podcast. And, you know, I hope you have a safe trip. And, hey, don't leave any exposed valuables in Ames. I hear they've got some folks that don't mind picking up loose change and whatnot.
Yeah, we'll make sure to lock our doors on the car. And, you know, Don Trump will be there. And, so we got to be worried about a lot of different things over there this week. And, you know, and hopefully Iowa locks the locker room in good fashion, too.
So. All right. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Oh, it's always good to have your former colleagues on, your former media types.
Yeah, good guy. You know, I think we are blessed in the state of Iowa between the folks at the Gazette, my good friends at the Quad City Times, like Steve Batterson, and I guess he'll get some grudging respect to the Register as well. You know, I think we've got some solid sports reporters to rely on here. So it's always nice to chat with him.
So I really liked his prediction for his secret, confidential, off the record, but totally public and out there prediction that we're going to just pound them by 17 points. I would love to get behind that. And, you know, I've said this for the last couple of years. I am also predicting a big Iowa win, because my sanity requires it.
Well, you know what they say, though, Jim, that the, you know, continuing to do the same, how does that whole statement go? If you keep doing the exact same thing, expecting different results in failure, that is the definition of insanity. So,
but I don't see the team doing the same thing, though. I see them changing the, you know, changing the results. So,
well, you know, and here's the funny thing. All offseason, I've been promising that I was going to stick to my guns, and I was going to say, until they show me otherwise and prove otherwise, I'm going to pick Iowa State in this game. But I don't know. I can't do it. Because you look at them, and you're like, how? How? I mean, like you've been saying over and over, they literally can't beat anybody else that's a Power 5 school, basically, except Iowa.
It's like if there's like some kind of annual, you know, MMA fight or wrestling match between, you know, I don't know who's the big guy right now, that Cena guy, and versus my daughter. And she whoops him 7 times out of 10.
But you still can't pick her.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just look side by side. You're like, logically, I can't. But I've got it, and I'll go first this time. I am predicting an Iowa victory. I'm predicting more than 2 scores. I know Iowa State plays out of their goddamn minds when we go up there and they see us in those, you know, in those Tiger Hawks. I know they've got their fans. They're probably packing more folks into that new stadium than we are into Kinnick these days. But I have to, because A, my sanity requires it, as I mentioned, and B, because as I said, for me, this is a litmus test. And I'll tell you, it's not just a matter of I'm going to be mad for a week or two or a couple weeks. I'm if we don't come out of there with a victory, I've pretty much already started to write off the season, and it's not even October.
Yeah. So do you have a score?
Yeah, so I'm going to say, I think that we have no problem scoring. I'm going to go back to what I did last week. I'm going to say 35-21.
Okay.
I'll say 24. 35-24.
35-24, okay. You're optimistic. I like that. You know, it's interesting when you say that they play out of their minds. But you know what? When you go back and look at it, it's not even that they play that well. They play better than they do in most of the rest of their games, but they're still beatable. You know, I think, and Scott kind of pointed that out, you know, that it seems that you have to have a combination of Iowa State playing slightly above their usual crappy level and Iowa somehow sinking down to below their level and finding some way to just step on themselves. I am, though, buoyed by the fact, you know, not only what I saw with my own eyes this last week, But what Scott had to say from when he sits down and talks to the players and talks to the coaches, that he feels there's a new attitude, a new swagger. So I've got to respect that and think that this is the year that Iowa finally, well, I shouldn't say finally, because as he pointed out, they have won two out of the last three. That's how bad they're into us as fans' heads. That yeah. It feels like we're on like an 8-game losing streak, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Wow. But I'm not quite as optimistic as you. I think Iowa, for whatever reason, always finds a way to have some errors in this game. I think that they're going to pull it out at 27-17. So I'm still going to go with a double-digit win. But I think there's going to be a little bit more hand-wringing and nail-chewing this week than last.
Now, he said, to be fair, Scott said two out of the three last
in Ames.
Right. But I mean,
two in a row in Kinnick. Right?
Yeah. Just going back, the last five, it's 3-2 for the last five, and going back, it's even worse than that. So, no, I mean, that's kind of a misleading stat. They are a little bit, it's a little bit worse than that.
But some of the games are so weird. I mean, there's the triple overtime game where I don't believe Iowa scored a touchdown. They didn't score a touchdown, and we lost.
Yeah.
Well, how does that even happen?
I don't know.
Some of the weird shit that just happens is it just... It's, but you know what? Here's another little thing though, is that we don't have any injuries. I mean, like pretty much the whole team's healthy.
Doozy's
right now.
Still out.
Well, we don't have any fresh injuries.
Well, okay, yeah, we didn't
from
have it. No one
camp
got injured
or the first game.
Right. But I mean, it would be nice to have him ready for this game. He was a monster. So yeah. So well, all right. So we're both predicting a victory. And really, it can't be any other way.
Well, if this is going to be a redemptive season, it has to be. Right.
Otherwise, it is, in my opinion, the harbinger of the Ferentz swan song.
Well, there was a stat on Hawkeye Report somebody pulled out, and I didn't get a chance to double check and verify it to make sure it's true, but it feels like it's true, so I'm going to assume it is.
Let's just say it is.
That Iowa teams under Ferentz that have finished with 8 or more wins are 6-1 against Iowa State. And teams with fewer than 8 wins, I can't remember the exact number, but it's really bad. Like 2-6 or something like that. I mean, it's bad.
Well, yeah, the only great team that lost to them would have been 0-2, right?
Correct. Yeah. And in Iowa State's defense, they had an NFL quality quarterback. They had a nice bowl team that year. I mean, that was that was probably the best Iowa State team ever?
Yeah, ever. Question Definitely mark? Of our lifetime.
Right.
So
and that's the other thing. I wouldn't lose so much sleep if they had a quality program and we lost rivalry games. That would be something. That would be like Michigan State or
I said something last week about the only people that Iowa State beats with any consistency is us and Kansas. And someone pointed out to me that Kansas is actually 8-8 against Iowa State. So it's just us.
Yeah.
Somebody on Twitter corrected me and said, no, it's actually worse than that, Bladel.
And Kansas and Iowa State are two of the bottom-feeding football teams. I mean, as much as Iowa has had struggles recently, I don't think anybody in the country would put them down as a bottom-feeding program. They're just not.
Yeah. Well, and they have a chance to exercise that demon here next week. And again, as you said, There was nothing definitively solved last Saturday against Illinois State. We've been optimistic before. We've said that the we've hit bottom and we're turning it around. We've said that before. We felt this way before. We've been let down again. So this is an opportunity. This week is an opportunity to make it real and to make it tangible and to really start to turn things in the right direction. I think you win next week, you've got a really solid chance of coming out of the non-conference undefeated, and that has not happened in a very long time.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, some unfortunate news out of Pitt this week with their stud running back, James Conner, going down for the season.
Who wasn't a factor, though, in the second half against us. I mean, he tore it up for the first half.
Right, but he is by far their most dynamic playmaker. And
yes,
so
definitely.
The path to an undefeated non-conference goes through Ames, and it's eminently doable. Now it's time to perform.
Exactly. Well, that's a great note to end it on. It's all right there in front of this team. They have a new attitude, a new swagger. Let's hope they step up and take it. So with that, we'll wrap up. Great segment, great guest, and on Iowa.
Go Hawks!